Welcome to Writing and Publishing with Dumb Old Bob. Thanks for joining us for this episode. Let's get started. It's great to have you here for Writing and Publishing with Dumb Old Bob. This is our second episode, and I have a couple of different things I want to do. First up, in the opening episode, I mentioned that our schedule, our agenda for this effort, was more of a suggestion than a set firmly in place itinerary. Within a few minutes of setting up that introduction, as I began looking over notes, segments I had mapped out, and some of the segments we had even recorded and more, I realized that outline I provided already needed some work. To start off today's material, I'm going to give a bit of an overview that covers what you can expect from the first season of Writing and Publishing. And I've got a thought or two kicking around to explain where we might head as the podcast continues beyond these opening efforts. From there, we're going to get into what I originally intended this episode to be, a question and answer effort. I have three questions, formed out of questions and conversations and more that I have had with people over the years, that I think give a good overview of things for us as we take our first steps together. In our first episode, I mentioned that becoming a published author isn't that hard to do. And, unfortunately, it's not. It's not if you don't mind publishing an awful piece of garbage. The hard part is publishing a good book, a book you're proud of. The hard part is promoting and marketing and all sorts of other areas that are part of the book publishing process, but not really what we'd call the writing of the book. The hard part is meeting your expectations. We've got a quick outline of where we're headed with writing and publishing, and we've got three questions. It's time to dive in. Over the course of my work, I've interacted with other writers and professionals in the writing community. And as we talk, questions and thoughts and approaches and all sorts of other ideas come up, and many of them come up repeatedly. When discussing some of the frustrations involved in the process of getting published, ranging from publishing a short article for a magazine to publishing a novel, with all the stops that may be in between and around and include different areas, I began to think about my efforts. I started wondering about the mistakes I made, start wondering about the mistakes I still make. I wonder about things that I did early on and stopped, things I still do today, sometimes quite closely to the way I always have, and sometimes with massive adjustments, things I've added to the work I do. All of that led me to developing a program I began delivering for groups, mostly at libraries. It's become known as You May Never Get Published, Horror Stories and Thoughts to Help You Try Anyway. I still present it today, and you can check out the calendar on my website to see more about upcoming appearances. For right now, the idea to keep in mind is that the You May Never Get Published workshop is providing the foundation of Season 1 of this podcast. It's divided into three areas. First, a look at different areas of the publishing industry. Second, a review of the steps that move from book idea to physical book in hand. Third, assorted tips and tricks and notes that summarize parts 1 and 2 and lead to a Q&A to wrap up the get-together. The next few episodes are going to be based on part 1. We're going to look at the industry, and that involves traditional publishing, print-on-demand publishing, self-publishing, and all sorts of other titles and categories given to the efforts. We'll mention agents and finances and other subjects. That will be followed by a run covering part 2. You have a book idea. What are the steps and preparations and actions involved that bring you from that initial idea that you want to put into a book all the way to a nicely designed package on a shelf, in an online cart, or available for digital download? What surprises await you in designing your schedule for PR work and marketing? Then we move into part 3, a catch-all area of sorts. Mostly it will wrap things up and lead to the ending of season 1. Between what I already have set up and some of the feedback I may receive from you, Along the way, I have some surprises planned, and I'm sure there are some unplanned surprises that will work. I want to incorporate your thoughts. I want to develop the material that I have, all of which could mean bonus episodes and special episodes, but even more, I hope and anticipate it will mean more than just a single season run. This podcast isn't an effort where a handful of episodes will cover it all, so let's just break out a ribbon for the box and it will be done. For one thing, I love being an active member of the writing community. I want to interact with other writers, I want to interact with you, and I want to consider your questions and experiences. For another idea, I'm still writing and publishing, and my ongoing habits and approaches, as well as new experiences and discoveries, add to what I know and what I do. The industry is changing all the time, and just these thoughts mean there will always be material to explore and reconsider. There will always be reasons for us to have conversations. As you offer up thoughts and questions, as I think about things I'd like to share, ideas along these lines could create all sorts of twists, and they will influence not only where we go this first season, but the ways we might set up future seasons. For now, we're about to cover three questions that will allow us to consider the landscape around us as we begin our journey together. What is the biggest issue facing a new writer that wants to be an author? This is a strange one because I've come to believe the answer is pretty vague. The biggest issue is everything. Everything. And yes, I'll explain. Let's say we go outside and approach 100 or 1,000 or more people at random. I feel very comfortable saying that a ridiculously high percentage, not 100%, but darn close to it, could identify the stages and the process involved in bringing a book to life. They'd all get, in some fashion, that a writer needs an idea for a book. And they'd move on and say that the manuscript needs to be written and edited and polished. The book needs to be packaged with a cover and such, and then it needs to be printed. It's simple, but it covers the ground, and even a person that isn't a writer would get it, and that creates a perfect scenario for our writer's problem. Familiarity, comfort. The foundation is so basic. As writers, we feel like we've got a great grip on things. But everybody does. The process of writing a book isn't mystical. It isn't hidden. And instead of having a great grip on things, we are horrible at self-critique and project management. As something to consider, let's look at the end of the process, the publishing and sales end. You've set July 1st for publishing your book, so in your mind, you've got that date. And to be fair, the final days in June, really, circled as the deadline for the book to be ready, right? Nope. You need to have it ready for you to look over ahead of that. Let's say you want to order a proof copy, a physical printing of the book, ahead of final approval. Given the way printing and shipping runs, you'll need to buffer at least 2 weeks for that, 2 to 4 weeks to be safe. And if you think there is any chance you might need to make changes and maybe even order a second proof copy to review, add on more time. That means your deadline for a finished book is no longer the end of June, it's mid-May to the opening days of June. Now, consider the marketing and possible writer appearances. Newspapers don't want you to contact them on June 30th, handing over a press release about the next day's book publication. They need to know about that roughly 2 weeks in advance. Libraries and bookstores, for readings and signings and other appearances, they're working on schedules at least 3 months out into the future and closer to 5 to 6 months out. You cannot contact them in June for your July 1st release and expect to get appearances scheduled for June, July, and August. In June, they're finishing up plans for the fall and sketching out the winter. Summer months are locked in. So, the issue is that most writers don't seem to understand what they don't know, and it's kind of a blinder situation. Some of us may like to work from a schedule, and some of us may not. In either case, it feels like it should be step one, then step two, then step three. Complete an item, move along the checklist. But it's not. Many areas follow different schedules, and those schedules overlap. Other parts of the process need to be appreciated for the time they take, the issues that may develop, and what you can and can't control. A few moments ago, we mentioned proof copies, public relations and press releases, working with bookstores and libraries. And if you noticed it, the proof copies and the media, for instance, are often happening around the same time. The contacting of places for author appearances can be months ahead of that. It is a magical dance, combining all of these efforts and getting them to work together so that the release is timed with the publicity and the public relations and the efforts that you're going to put into promoting your work and supporting it with you getting out into the community. I have found that most writers working on their first book projects have the biggest troubles with understanding how to approach the project from their weaknesses and strengths into how everything needs to be timed. There's no shame in that. I continue to stumble over my timing on every project. It's the recognition of it that allows you to address it, however. Until they encounter having messed up something like mistakes found in a proof copy that arrived a day or two before the supposed release date or the press release timing, these are issues that a writer more often than not misses. We don't see the edge of the cliff until we're already falling over it. What is the biggest mistake or problem facing a new writer with a project? Now, at first, this seems similar to the first question, and in many ways it is. It's about understanding the project. But let's approach it from a slightly altered point of view. For this question, let's use the idea that we need to understand every project is different, and the mistake becomes applying a one-size-fits-all solution to every problem. An example, I get asked about the best publisher to use for self-publishing. There's no such thing. There's no such thing as one single best publisher for self-publishing options. Consider, one writer may be focused on image quality for the pictures and illustrations being used. Another is concerned with distribution, having friends and family in multiple countries, and if only using one publishing place in one country, shipping costs from that single source feeding international destinations becomes prohibitive. A third writer might be focusing on ebook editions. When you're kicking around getting visuals to be consistent from book to book and paper quality, especially in a print-on-demand scenario, that's much different in the issues it presents than sorting out who can ship to the United States, Canada, Australia, and England. And both of those are different than sorting out Kindle and Nook and Apple and so on. Early on, I got frustrated by many of the sources of information and assistance I could find when it came to answering my questions. Don't get me wrong, there are a lot of fantastic places to look and find information, and as we move along with this podcast, we're going to explore some of those. Still, I kept encountering folks that by all measures qualified as experts and had no idea of how to provide me with advice for my situation and circumstances. They might be discussing trying to get a book signing without going into how bookstores handle sales, especially from self-published authors. Or, though rare, they won't cover how libraries may limit sales options entirely at events. They could outline a publicity campaign that omits the idea that most local newspapers are not going to write 3 or 4 features on you in a single year. Similarly, most libraries and bookstores are not going to schedule you for multiple signings each year. Basically, they might present the topic, but they do so seemingly with an assumption that their solution is available to you, and far too often, in my experience, it hasn't been. There is a massive shift that occurs between the places where these differences catch you off guard and unaware, and where you know walking in that you might need to adjust and modify thoughts to fit your situation. The mistake is being caught off guard and unaware. You should always believe that there's more involved to any subject, and that certain aspects may need to be tailored to your needs. You should always know that every project is different. What is the single most important piece of advice you'd give to a writer? Well, that's simple. Keep your wallet in your pocket. In part, this extends from the first two questions. It's about project management, a sense of comfort, a perhaps undeserved sense of comfort that we have with the process and the surroundings, and how all projects are not the same. I know people that self-published, and honestly, more often than not, they weren't self-publishing, they were self-printing, that decided to increase the number of author copies they were ordering because the printer offered discounts for larger numbers. In the end, instead of storing 100 copies of their unsold book in the garage, they needed to store 2,000 copies. I know people that paid services for editing and graphic design work only to find themselves with $5,000 out of their savings account, perhaps 50 copies of the book in hand as part of the service agreement, but they had not sold a single copy of the book yet. As want-to-be authors, we have a weakness. There's a reason the word vanity and the phrase vanity publishing is involved in this process. That weakness is wanting to see our work printed. There is a level of satisfaction, often justified, sometimes not, that a printed book has increased value. And, in turn, we apply it personally as a perception that we have value as a result of publishing our book. That familiarity with the process and the desire to see ourselves in print leads to some dangerous situations where we are very vulnerable in the decisions we make. When someone says our efforts could be improved by hiring an outside editor or by bringing in an artist to create material for the cover, we nod. We're familiar with the process. Good work gets edited and handled by professionals, and professionals get paid. A printer, and it is a printer, but that vanity thing swirling, because we're going to do the work and get it sold, our book is getting published. A printer drops the price per copy by 50 cents if we order 500 copies, drops it a dollar if we order 2,000. It sure feels like we're ahead $2,000 by ordering 2,000 copies. You should always be scared and hesitant to pay for anything. Keep your wallet in your pocket. The scary part is there are plenty of examples where spending the money is the right thing to do. I know and have met writers that have produced strong, good manuscripts. They then handed that manuscript over to a quality editor, that person worked their magic, and the good manuscript was raised to exceptional. They got a talented artist involved, and the cover became an eye-catching marvel that drew in potential buyers on the visual connection alone. I also know writers that have developed processes and markets that means they know they will have a certain level of demand for their books, and for them, taking advantage of printing discounts creates tremendous revenue potential. The problem is taking out your wallet without doing your homework. The problem is a lack of knowledge. Taking out your wallet for the seems-right impulse charge rather than a well-considered right thing to do cost. Yes, be prepared to invest in your writing and in yourself. Yes, there are costs and things that make sense. Things that are more than worth every penny. There are reasons to take your wallet out. There are also places that are looking to take advantage of your inexperience and your desire to be published. Be smart, not emotional. The best advice that's important from the start, keep your wallet in your pocket. You've been listening to Writing and Publishing with Dumb Old Bob. This podcast is brought to you by Parkside Backpack Productions in partnership with In My Backpack. To learn more about me, this podcast, and my writing, visit the In My Backpack site today at inmybackpack.com. I was assisted in the development of the podcast by Justin Gillen, Jay Gillen, and Karen Chappell. Justin is a phenomenal musician, and he wrote, played, and recorded all of the music we use on our podcasts. Jay is an extremely talented artist that has been delivering great work on projects with me for quite some time. In addition to all of his designs and efforts for Dumb Old Bob, he also created the iconic logo for In My Backpack. Karen is a creative, motivated, thoughtful woman that has been delivering countless exceptional technical results and ideas for our productions and has been a driving force in bringing our podcasts to reality. And while I would love to take all of the credit, the truth is, if you are enjoying the Dumb Old Bob podcasts, the talents and contributions of these three are playing a significant role in us being able to accomplish that. I invite you to send along your questions, suggestions, and comments. We have pages on several social media sites for Dumb Old Bob, and you can also reach us by sending along an email. Thanks for stopping in for this episode, and check in with us again soon. Backpackville, we're all friends here. Until the next time, have a great day.